Alaska. Good morning, Alaska, and welcome to Line One, your health connection on Alaska Public Media. I am your host, Prentice Pemberton. Are you tired of the yelling and the power struggles and the disrespect and defiance of your challenging child? Do you long for a feeling of peace and connection in your family and just want your child to do what you ask them without it always devolving into arguments and fighting? If so, you'll want to stay tuned for the next hour for an important discussion about how you can stop yelling at your child, reduce your own stress, and regain a sense of control in your home. On today's edition of Line One, clinical psychologist Dr. Paul Sunseri is joining me to discuss his new book, Gentle Parenting Reimagined, How to Make It Work with Oppositional Defiant Kids. Welcome, Dr. Sunseri. Thank you for joining me today. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Prentice. Thank you for having me on. And I have to say, this is going to be a treat for me, the opportunity to speak to another therapist about all of these ideas. So it should be a very fun discussion.
Yeah, I wish I'd had this book, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago when I was coming up. I came up in a lot of different environments and a lot of different treatment centers and with a lot of aggressive kids, and that's been sort of my specialty since I started. So I'm excited to pick your brain and learn some things as well. First off, I usually ask people how to pronounce their name before we start, but am I saying that right? It seems pretty straightforward.
Yes, you got 100% correct. So thank you, Sunseri. And Prentice, you don't have to call me Dr. Sunseri. Paul is perfectly fine.
All right, Paul. I appreciate that. Well, let's get us started by give us a little bit about your background and how you got into this line of work of working with behaviorally challenging children.
Well, I've wanted to be a psychologist since I was a kid. I think maybe I got the idea into my head when I was around 12 or thereabouts. And I went to UC Davis here in California and graduated with my bachelor's degree. But I really had no idea what population I wanted to work with. I just kind of stumbled into working with kids who are really challenging. So where I went to school, there was a residential treatment program. And you know what those are, but maybe for your listeners who don't, it's a place where kids go to live because their behaviors are so out of control that they can't live with their own families. Usually they'll stay there for a year or two, and the idea is to get them back home again. But these are pretty tough kids, and I needed a job. So I thought, what's available in my area? And like I said, one of these programs was there in advertising. So I started working in it, and I've never done anything since. That population absolutely stuck with me. And my entire career, I've been doing this now for over 40 years, has only been working with kids who have very, very serious behavior problems.
All right. That's remarkably similar to my story, a BA in psychology, and I came out 23 years old, and I was looking for a job. And the first place, I don't know if you ever heard of this place, but it was a place called Straight Inc., and then it changed to, oh no, it was Straight Inc. They changed the name later because there was a bunch of stuff in the news, but essentially, it was the opposite of gentle parenting. It was aggressive, it was restraint, it was sitting in chairs all day. Like it was, you know, I didn't know any better. And it was a last resort started by parents, and it was tough love, right? It was, yeah. It was tough love. And that was a learning curve for me. And, it didn't quite ever sit right with me but at 23 and you're, going with the flow and trying to make a living and get started in your career. So, and then I evolved from there and have been a foster parent and worked in crisis intervention specialist. So it's a similar story. Can you talk about, I mean, gentle parenting is something I think maybe some people are familiar with the idea, but can you talk about the gentle parenting philosophy and what is your book is Gentle Parenting Reimagined. So what is reimagined about your take on it?
Well, gentle parenting has been around now for about 10 years or so. And in kind of its truest version, it really emphasizes parents and kids having the best relationship they possibly can. It's a very relationship-oriented way of parenting. And it's about being in tune with your kids, having a deep emotional connection to them, And unlike maybe previous generations of parenting, there's less of an emphasis on punishment and more of an emphasis on leaning into your kids when they're struggling and trying to with what's going on with them. So that's gentle parenting, sort of typically how people understand it. I wrote the book because, as I've mentioned, I work with really, really difficult kids. So these are kids who are just hugely disrespectful to their parents, yell and say mean things to them. Many of them curse at their parents. They're just very sometimes explosive kids who can be difficult to raise. And they're often non-compliant, meaning they have a hard time following directions. They say no a lot more often to their parents than they say yes. They generally get into frequent arguments and maybe even fistfights with their siblings. These are kids who, won't do their homework, won't help out around the house. They're just really, really oppositional. And these are the families that come to me. And it seems to me that every parent I've ever met really likes the idea of being gentle, right? I think if our default is to be warm and kind with kids, like you can't go wrong with that. There's no downside to that. The problem is, it's very hard to apply the gentle parenting philosophy to these really difficult kids. And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to write a book for parents whereby, yes, you can be gentle and loving and kind and supportive of your kid. But at the same time, if you've got one of those kids that sort of biologically or temperamentally is more difficult, you got to do more than just be gentle, right? And I'm not in any way an advocate of tough love. And that's kind of how I was taught to do it when I was in residential treatment, too. I think the state of the art back then was just, there was no state of the art.
That was the
It was kind of the
rage.
Wild West.
That was the rage back in the day.
Yeah, and the program that I work for, the folks who ran it were very nice people and very well-intentioned, but they didn't know what to do with these kids either, right? So, I was dealing with six kids, all unrelated, all living under the same roof, who just had these just tremendous problems. They think nothing of throwing a chair at me or telling me to F off or becoming physically combative. I've been hit way more times than I can count. I've had all kinds of things thrown at me. I've been bitten, thankfully, just one time. Only bitten once. But really, anything you can imagine a kid doing is what I encountered, and I suspect you did too. And what happened to me is, most of what I was taught to do by my supervisors was just terrible. It was just things that simply did not work, and they were often very unkind interventions. So I'll give you an example of one. And so if a kid didn't finish his lunch or his dinner, who knows why it mattered to any of us if they didn't finish it. But if they didn't finish it, what I was told to do was just reserve them the same meal at the next time. And they had to keep eating that meal until it was gone. So, now in the 21st century, we see that as just being cruel and stupid. It's part of my language. It just is. And so I wanted to write a book for parents where, yeah, you can be soft and loving, but you also need to know what to do to change these behaviors. So if a kid is screaming at you, I will teach you exactly what to do in those situations because I've learned how to do those things mostly through trial and error over the course of my career. When I've worked with kids and they're doing something that is not okay, either with their parents or with their teachers, I would try to intervene. I would, let's try this and see what happens. And most of the interventions, particularly early in my career, simply didn't work at all. They just had no effect on the behavior. Sometimes the interventions actually made the behavior far worse. But every so often, through just luck alone, I think I would try something and boom, it actually had a beneficial effect. It decreased the probability of the negative behavior occurring again. And I remembered those. I filed those away. And eventually my toolbox started with nothing in it, but it would add a tool after a tool after tool. And eventually it got quite large. And all the nutty things that I have other or other people have tried, I simply stopped using those. And those are obviously the things that I would never teach a parent to this day. So I think every intervention in the book is what I think of as battle tested. It's like it's not just tried once or twice. And these are not things I've learned in books. These are things that I've learned directly through my own experience with kids and their families. So it's basically a roadmap to how to change all of the negative behaviors that the vast majority of parents who have oppositional kids struggle with on a day-to-day basis in their homes.
Yeah, what I love about the book is the first half of it is just background and reinforcement and the principles of gentle parenting and why it matters and why not to hit your kids and things like that and how coercion and control just don't work. And then, you know, all the questions I get from parents, well, how do I do it if he follows me around all day and won't stay in his room when I send him to a room or won't empty the dishwasher when I tell him to? And then you get into actual practical tips and strategies for how people can apply this in their homes. And I thought it was a great read, and I wouldn't say that if I didn't think it was. It's going to be in my bag for parents to use for sure, because it just sort of sums it up, and it's quick. It took me 2 days to read it. It's just, it's not super, I don't know, what's the word?
Dense?
Yeah, dense academic. And academic. Yes, that's exactly it. It's real. And so I really appreciate it. I want to, I just got to take a second to remind folks, if you're tuning in late, my guest today is parenting expert, Dr. Paul Sunseri. He's joined us today to talk about his new book, Gentle Parenting Reimagined, How to Make It Work with Oppositional and Defiant Children. One of the things I really liked about that you said was, I mean, these are some of my favorite kids to work with. They are smart, they are resilient, they are determined, strong-willed. You know, if you have little Sally at home who's very compliant, then gentle parenting works wonderfully. Just love her up, right? And she'll go do what she's supposed to do. But little Johnny might be a different story, because he's going to spit and he's going to kick and he's going to bite and he's going to say no and he's going to scream at you and call you names. And that's the stuff you get into. So, all right. So let's move on. Let's, I guess, talk briefly, because most people are pretty familiar with the parenting styles, the four parenting styles. So if you could just touch on them real quickly and then talk about the ones that are effective and the ones that are you base your book on.
You bet. Just a quick comment about the book too, in terms of the structure and how it's laid out. You're right that those introductory chapters, they're more foundational, but they're also really important, mm-hmm. right? You have to have an understanding of the foundation of these new strategies in order to be able to implement them. So I do that in the early part of the book. And what I encourage parents to do is read the entire thing. Don't skip to the chapter that interests you the most. So say, for example, you've got a kid that will not do their homework. Maybe they've got 20 missing assignments. They're barely passing their classes. The temptation is going to go right to that chapter and read it. But I don't think you would find that very helpful. You have to know the foundational skills in order to be able to apply the specific interventions that you find in all of those later chapters. And I try to write a chapter on everything, every common topic that I deal with in my practice every day. There's a chapter on just about everything. Mm-hmm. So just as I said, there's homework, there's one to get your kids to do chores, how to help older kids who are reluctant to get their driver's license or get a job. I talk about that. There's one on disrespect. There's one on not following directions. There's one on just about everything. And if you're a parent of one of these kids, I think there's absolutely a ton of material for you in just about every chapter. But certainly some of them are going to be more targeted to what you're struggling with.
I think that's a good point you make, because you can't understand the chapter without reading the foundational stuff. And
exactly.
you won't know how to implement it correctly.
Yes, that's true. So there's something I call pause, earn, and return reinforcement. That's introduced fairly early in the book. So if you just jump to the chapter on chores, and I'm referencing pause, earn, and return reinforcement, you're right. Not going to know what that is or how to use it.
Yeah. Okay, so parenting styles.
You asked parenting styles. Yeah, thank you for that. I kind of got off track a little bit. So here are the big ones, and lots of people are familiar with these. I'll just run through them. I'll start with the one that tends to work the best. It's called authoritative. An authoritative parent is one who is kind and loving and gentle and all of those good things, but also at the same time is very clear with their kids about what their expectations are. They set good limits with their kids, right? If the child behaves in some way that parent doesn't care for very much, it's they're very on top of those behaviors, and they will do and say things to help that child behave in a better way. It's a very balanced way of parenting and all kinds of research to back up the fact that authoritative parenting really is going to produce the happiest, healthiest, most well-adjusted kids. They're going to be polite. They're going to fit into the world really well. They're going to make great friends. They're going to be great partners and great employees someday. So that's the one really to focus on. And gentle parenting tends to fall most neatly into that category, but it leans a little bit towards the permissive style. And the permissive style of parenting is one where parents, they just kind of let their kids do whatever. Those kids don't have a lot of structure. There aren't a lot of limits. Those kids are often treated by the parent as if they're more of a friend or a peer. And the research on permissive parenting shows that it's just not a helpful way to raise kids because those kids aren't as well behaved. They tend to be very entitled, right? Because their whims have essentially been indulged most of their lives. And so when they try to get into relationships or get into the work world, it's a shock to them because that's just not how the rest of the world works. And so permissive parenting is just not the way to go. But gentle parenting does kind of lean in that direction, unfortunately, sometimes. Sometimes people see gentle parenting as just a way to let their kid get away with murder. And so it's often criticized for that and really right. made fun of, I think.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of things on social media that makes fun of gentle parenting, but it's the form of gentle parenting that I don't ascribe to. It's again, where those parents let their kids get away with all kinds of things they shouldn't. And then the last parenting style, that's authoritarian. That's more my own parents' style of parenting. I'm a youngish baby boomer and my parents were part of what was called the silent generation. And that was just kids should be seen and not heard. Do it because I said so. And authoritarian parents, it's very militaristic. It's like, do what I tell you to do. Don't argue with me. Get it done. It's essentially behavior change through more of a controlling practice than I think is ideal. The problem with authoritarian parents is often those kids grow up to not have the best relationship with their parents.
Right.
Sometimes there's a lot of anger and resentment. And you can get kids to behave by riding them super hard. But at the same time, there's a big price to be paid for that.
Right. I think we've lost, or Dr. Sunseri is frozen right now, so we will attempt to get him back. But after this short break, we will return for more of our conversation with clinical psychologist and author and parenting expert, Dr. Paul Sunseri. I'm Prentice Pemberton. You're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I am your host, Prentice Pemberton. If you are just tuning in, my guest today is clinical psychologist and parenting expert, Dr. Paul Sunseri. Dr. Sunseri has joined us today to talk about parenting oppositional and defiant children. Try this again. Before the break, we had lost Dr. Sunseri, but Paul, are you back with us?
Yes, I can hear you fine if you can hear me.
I can hear you. That's excellent.
Fantastic. Where did I drop off? What was the last thing you remember me saying?
The consequences of this sort of, I mean, because you were talking about fear and how, I mean, I always tell parents fear can make compliant kids, but there's a cost. And so I think exactly. You were talking about the cost of that long term. So if you can pick up there.
Sure. So that's the authoritarian parenting style. And you know, you, just as you said, you can get a kid to do anything by riding them super hard. The problem with that is, even though you get kind of the surface compliance, the price you pay for that are kids are often resentful of their parents. And I don't think the authoritarian parenting style does a great job if, in fact, you want to be close to your kids, close and strongly connected. So, and that's what the research says about it as well. It doesn't necessarily raise happy, well-adjusted people. It raises people who sometimes can be angry and resentful.
Yeah, that's what I see a lot of men and adults, but men in particular that I work with that are really, really angry. And they say, well, you know, this is, I turned out fine, but they have mm-hmm. difficulty in their relationships and they're yelling and screaming at their kids all the time. And they don't seem very happy. So There is a consequence. And like you said, if you want to be close to your kid and connected and have them talking to you as a teenager, it's not going to work. It works until they're about 12. and then they tend to push back significantly.
Yes, that's exactly correct. So authoritative is probably the one that's been established by research as being the most effective. And gentle parenting, as I said, mostly falls into that category, but it leans permissive too.
Okay, we have our first caller, so I'm going to go ahead and get Harriet in Anchorage. You're on line one with Dr. Senseri. Go ahead.
Okay, my question is, Paul, is there a connection between neonatal abstinence syndrome babies and noncompliance as they get older? Thank you. I'll take my answer offline.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the first part of the question. I heard neonatal.
Is there a connection between...
And then I heard, is there a relationship?
Between neonatal abstinence syndrome and challenging behavior in children, which gets into one of my questions is what causes this. But do you know, I don't know anything about neonatal abstinence syndrome, but can you speak to that?
Neither do I, unfortunately. And I wish I could answer the question, but I'm just not familiar with that. But I can answer what you had just asked, Prentice, which is, you know, how is it that kids become this way? And my best guess is there are just some kids who come in the world being just more naturally difficult to parent. It's likely a temperamental difference. It's just part of their personality. And the evidence that I have for that is the vast majority of the families that I work with, they're siblings in the equation, right? The kid who presents for treatment has brothers and sisters. But the vast majority of the time, the brothers and sisters are, by every indication, just typical normal kids, right? They're not oppositional. They're not disrespectful. They don't throw massive temper tantrums. So the question is, you know, siblings raised in the same family with the same parents, why is it that one kid is so vastly different? And that's my understanding of it, is it just came into the world that way. They didn't ask to be this way, but they are. And so one of the cool things about my work too is I don't really need to know how they got to be this way. I don't really need to know the why. And sometimes people have the belief that there's some underlying cause or situation or trauma. And if you just figure out the underlying cause of the behavior, that will change things. And I just don't see it that way at all. And what, as I said, what makes my job easy is I don't have to know that. I know how to change behavior regardless of what the cause of it is. And sure, if there's trauma, we deal with trauma. But I work with all kinds of super, super hard kids who have zero trauma history. They are just sort of this way. So I don't really know how they got to be this way. But like I said, I can still do my job perfectly well and bring about all kinds of amazing changes with kids without really even getting super stuck on the why or even the diagnosis for that matter.
Yeah, diagnoses are, they're helpful for insurance and they help us inform some decision making about the approach. But, you know, I agree with you. Early in my career, I would, you know, parents would come in and the kid would be acting out and I would say, what's wrong with these parents, right? It's got to be something they're doing wrong or there's some kind of trauma. And then the more I've done it and the more I've worked with, you know, hundreds and hundreds of difficult teens, some are just strong-willed and they're fighters and they're not going to give in. And it seems to be, my experience with my own kids is they're vastly different. And you use examples of your own children and how different they were. And I've always told parents, if you're parenting your kids the same way, you're probably doing it wrong because they have different needs.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, and every parent I've ever sat across from believes that it's their fault, that they did something to make their kid this way, or that they're bad parents. And if they were better parents, they wouldn't behave this way. And I do not believe that to be the case at all. There are truly bad, abusive parents, don't get me wrong, but that's not most people. The folks that I sit with, they're usually very loving human beings who are trying their very best with this kid, but they've run out of ideas. They just simply don't know what to do because the average parent is never taught how to do any of these things. You know, average parents do great with easier kids, but they just need to learn a skill set that just doesn't come naturally to most parents. And that's what I try to do in my work, is teach them those skills.
And that's because of the level of frustration. And parents come in desperate for answers and they want some solutions. And so, you know, the question, there's a part in your book, Becoming a No Yelling Family, which my question is, that seems aspirational and it didn't necessarily work in my own life. Although I've gotten better at it as my kids have gotten older, but it is so frustrating and they can get to you and push your buttons. And is that a real thing to become? And I know it is, but to become a no yelling family, can you explain what you mean by that and how is it possible to achieve?
Yeah, it's a great question. And often when I first meet with families and I introduce the topic of not raising your voice with kids, they think I'm crazy. They think that's impossible. And here's how I look at all of this, which is that when parents raise their voice, they yell at kids. Parents usually don't start off by yelling, right? They kind of work their way into the yelling piece because they do get frustrated. And if you've asked a kid 10 times to clean up their bedroom and they're still not doing it, that's usually where parents get mad. And that's when they raise their voice. Out of sheer frustration alone, but there are multiple problems with this. The first one is kids will sometimes comply when you yell at them, right? Sometimes the yelling scares them enough to get them to do it. Sometimes what that communicates is, well, this time I'm serious about your room, right? But that's not what you want. You want to be able to ask your kid to clean up their bedroom once, maybe with a second reminder, and then they do it, right? You want them to listen for that calm, matter-of-fact, reasonable voice and comply to that voice. But if you just ask over and over and over and over again, you know, you tell them 10 times to clean their room and then you finally yell, you're teaching the kid to ignore every time you ask them nicely and only to listen to the loud voice. And if you yell and then the thing happens, the kid actually does the thing you want them to do, that's where principles of reinforcement come in on the parent's behavior, right? So if you do something and it works, if yelling works, then you're going to be taught to do that again and again. But nobody likes being yelled at. No kid I've ever met likes it. And I've never met a parent who likes yelling at their kids. So it's problematic on so many different levels. I do believe this is 100% possible for parents to not raise their voice with their kids. And it is aspirational, meaning you can't stop yelling on one day.
Right.
But you can work to become this. And because I had worked with kids for so long myself, I early on learned you can't yell at kids when they're misbehaving. Because if I tried doing that in one of those residential programs, all hell would break loose. The kid would just get even madder if I were to do that. So I learned just being matter of fact with a kid is always the way to go. And it's not just my profession that does this. You know, teachers don't yell at their students, or most of the time they don't. There are plenty of other professions that don't raise their voice and speak harshly when they're trying to get a kid to do something that they want them to do. And so because I had practiced it so long with my own four daughters, I never once raised my voice with them. And then I'm not saying that to say that I'm all that or anything like that.
Right.
It was just a skill set that I acquired over time. And I wanted them to, first of all, I never wanted to yell at my kids because it felt bad for me to do it. But I wanted them to listen to what I had to say the first time I said it. And I wanted to use a reasonable tone of voice in doing so. And if you know how to get a kid to do something, there goes the frustration element, right? I know how to get to get, I can get a kid to do their chore the first or second time I ask them. So I never get frustrated by that. Why would I get frustrated if I know exactly what to say to get the kid to do what I want them to do? So I never had a reason to move into the frustration side of things. So yes, I do think not yelling at your kids is the way to go. I do think it's absolutely possible to do this because I teach parents to do it every day. And they slip up every now and again, which is totally okay.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not asking everybody to be 100% perfect at this, but just try your best. And if you're one of those families where there's a lot of yelling in your family right now, there's tons of room for improvement. And if you could get your kid to do exactly what you want them to do, to be kind, to be respectful, to follow directions, to be kind and respectful to their teachers, to do their homework and do their chores without ever raising your voice, I'm sure you would be a no yelling family too. So it is aspirational, but it's one of those foundational skills I think is so important.
Yeah. And if you asked any parent, would you like that? They will all say yes. There's not anybody that wants to yell at their kids or intimidate them or try to control and force them to do things. So we do have another caller on the air, and I want to get to that on line eight. We have Andy in Anchorage who has a question for Dr. Sunseri. Go ahead, Andy.
Hello, doctor. This conversation's hitting pretty hard. I have an soon-to-be 11-year-old boy and an 8-year-old girl, 8-year-old girl. Easy peasy. My son, though, I'm a yeller, and he kind of just went through it. I'm trying to he's very smart. He is highly ADD, which we're treating for that. I've been treated for ADD because of what we're going through. I'm just looking for ways to not lose my my temper and yell, dealing with my 11-year-old boy who's a handful.
All right, Dr. Sunseri, that's right up your alley.
Yes, it is. Well, hello, Andy, and thank you so much for the question. And this is exactly what I deal with. There's no doubt about that. And I can tell from your voice and how you're phrasing things, you don't like yelling at your kid, but I bet he's a handful. I bet he just, you know, put you through the ringer every single day. And hopefully what I just said a few moments ago about people yell out of frustration, that resonated with you. Because again, if you knew how to get your boy to do the things you want them to do, I doubt you would yell at him either. And that's what the book is all about. And I don't know exactly what your son does on a daily basis, but likely he's disrespectful. Likely he's has a hard time following your directions. He's probably pretty emotionally reactive, so he gets super angry with you over things that most kids don't necessarily get angry about. So the message I want to send you is you don't have to live like this. These are all things that are absolutely changeable. And it is possible that after reading the book, you may need some additional help from a therapist. That could very well be true. But what I recommend for parents who have oppositional kids is to steer away from individual therapy. That's where a kid and the therapist are in the room together by themselves. Individual therapy, by and large, is not particularly effective for kids who are oppositional. But family therapy, where everybody's in the room together, coupled with some parent therapy, and I'm not meaning to say, Andy, you need therapy. What I'm saying is you need to be taught ways of responding to your boy that will work a lot better for you. You know, that's what the research says. So, you know, if you need additional help, I would not send your kid to a therapist who just meets with them individually. I would find somebody who's really good at behavior change and really good at family therapy. You get the most bang for your buck that way. So my heart goes out to you, and you're far from alone. I'm part of a couple of Facebook parent groups of kids with oppositional defiant kids, and one of those groups has 38,000 members.
Wow.
So there are so many folks in exactly your situation. But there is hope, and this stuff can be improved upon.
And I think, Andy, you still with us?
Yes, sir.
All right. I think it's really important to, and I was going to ask Dr. Sunseri about this later, but it's important to not expect your child to change immediately. It is going to take modeling and practice and really cooperative effort on the executive branch of the family, meaning mom and dad or just dad if it's only you. Are you still with his mother?
Oh, yes. She is just on vacation for 10 days. So I'm parenting by myself and working.
All right. Well, that's a challenge in and of itself. But I would encourage you to read this book and to look at these ideas. And I think you've made the first step in acknowledging that it doesn't feel good and it's not working. So now educate yourself on some of this stuff and really get, you know, immerse yourself in this idea, and it'll start to change your brain, and you try some things and look at different strategies. But it is, as Paul said, it is very doable, and I appreciate the call, and I appreciate you reaching out and sharing that story, because there's a lot of people that are in the same boat. You're not on your own.
Thanks, sir.
All right.
Francis, may I say something?
Yes.
You made a very good point about things don't change overnight. So here's what I've learned about challenging kids. So you can teach these skills to parents and they will start to implement them. But it generally takes several months before you start to see any kind of a noticeable change. Some kids are faster to catch on. Some kids are a little bit slower. But the reason it takes months is because, you know, you're vastly changing how you respond to a kid. And it takes kids a while to understand how your responses are different and to begin to feel that difference, right? So all throughout the book, all kinds of behavior change strategies. And so you'll start to use some of them and the kid is going to fight you. They're going to probably try to push for what's familiar to them to get you to either yell or drop some heavy duty consequence on them or whatever. But if you implement the strategies pretty faithfully, you will begin to see some of those changes occur. But just as you said, it is not overnight, but the changes will come.
Yeah, and that's the hard part for parents is they're like, I've been doing this for 2 weeks and being super nice and he's still, you know, spitting at me and biting and kicking and won't do anything. But the consistency over time is critical, and it can't be overstated that patience and modeling is so vital and important. So we've got a lot of ground to cover, and unfortunately, we are not going to have time to get through it all, and we are already at our 40-minute break, so the time is flying by. I do want to take a second to remind our listeners or to catch you up. If you're just tuning in, my guest today is clinical psychologist Dr. Paul Sunseri. Dr. Sunseri has joined us today to talk about his new book, Gentle Parenting Reimagined, How to Make It Work with Oppositional and Defiant Children. After a short break, we'll be back for more of our conversation with Dr. Paul Sunseri. I'm Prentice Pemberton, and you're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I am your host, Prentice Pemberton. For those of you who are just tuning in, my guest is clinical psychologist, author, and parenting expert, Dr. Paul Sunseri. Dr. Sunseri has joined us today to talk about gentle parenting and how it can work with oppositional and defiant children. Okay, we have a couple of calls lining up. We have David in Anchorage. You're on line one with Dr. Sunseri. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to make a comment about the child themselves. When I was young, was one of these type of acting out children, having ADHD. But if you look at the child and what it is that they're looking for as something to understand, it's because a lot of times I've had frustrations because I wasn't getting understood properly. There were also things like trying to hide a shame of like not being able to read properly. So you're hiding that by acting out.
Right.
It's things of those sorts that need to be understood. You know, children also are looking at you as a model to see how you react, because that's how they're going to be reacting when they're in similar situations. So you have to get into the head of the child a lot of times, too. It's not just behavioral, changing behavior. It's also understanding, you know, why the child themselves are doing this behavior.
Yeah, that's a great point. Dr. Sunseri, do you have I agree that there's often underlying things, and you make the point in your book, kids don't want to act badly.
No, they definitely do not. I've never met a kid who enjoys misbehaving. They may sometimes give the appearance of that when they're actively misbehaving, but no kid wants to call their parents those names, and certainly no kid feels good about doing that. And David, you're totally right that there are situations where there is something underlying that behavior. Maybe a kid who's really struggling academically in school, there might be an underlying learning disability, right? So that definitely should be taken into consideration. And sometimes there isn't, right? So a kid who maybe their chore is to take out the trash, but repeatedly doesn't do it and, you know, is resistant to the notion of it, that I don't know that there's much underlying that, except maybe for a lack of willingness to do it. So you are correct. So look for things that may be going on, but there are also plenty of other opportunities where there really isn't anything else going on other than the fact that the kid doesn't want to do it. Hey, Prentice, I hope that answers your question, David. Prentice, I have a suggestion, and I'll defer to your judgment on this, but we don't have a lot of time left. I want to give your listeners something really useful that they can take away in terms of behavior change. You want to could pivot a little bit, and maybe I can come up, or you can come up with an example, or one of your listeners can, of some specific behavior, and then I can give you an overview of what I would recommend to change that behavior. Would that be useful, do you think?
I think so. I was just trying to, I was looking at all the material we have to cover, and we have another couple of hours worth that we could talk about. I do want to take, Bianca's been waiting here for a little while. I want to take a quick phone call, and then we'll move on to some practical tips. Bianca, you're on line one. Go ahead.
Hi, gentlemen. Thank you. So yeah, I have a twin son. He's just turned 13, and I was have taken him into counseling before and had read about the oppositional defiant behavior and really thought that it fit. And the therapist really didn't like that diagnosis, didn't like to label it like that. And so I kind of wanted to get your take on some of his behaviors and maybe your kind of, I know over the phone you can't do a diagnosis, but maybe your thoughts. So he was, he likes to scream, likes to yell when he gets frustrated, will do name calling. He's 13 years old. He cannot sleep by himself or be alone by himself, and that really gives him a lot of anxiety. He's always got to be right. He's always got to come back with, you know, some answer, even though he's obviously wrong. And I just don't know. He's not growing out of it either. And I want to be able to help him. And I didn't know, just on a really quick basis, if those things might be something more I could look into, and maybe a psychiatrist instead of a therapist. I'm not sure.
Hi, Bianca. Those are all great questions. Let me see if I can answer as many of them as I can. So I'm not big on diagnoses either, and that's probably an entirely different show, and we could talk about why I feel that way. You know, many of them are really just descriptions of behavior. So you know what your son does that's problematic. I suppose somebody could say, well, this kid has oppositional defiant disorder. It doesn't tell me much more about him that I didn't know. It also doesn't tell me anything at all about how to change the situation with him. Psychiatrists, though, are very dialed into diagnosis because
Yeah.
it's from the diagnosis that they select medications for kids. There are no real medicines for oppositional defiant disorder. There are for ADHD, stimulants, and so forth. So if you go to a psychiatrist, you'll leave with a diagnosis, and you almost certainly will leave with some kind of a prescription. But here again, I don't pay an awful lot of attention to that. I think you should treat kids, not treat a diagnosis. And I would much prefer to think of one kid as just one kid and leave all those labels aside. And that's just me, and obviously other therapists look at it differently. So it sounds like from your description of what your son does, so there's yelling, there's screaming. I imagine he's being disrespectful probably during all of that. Bianca, can you hear me? I'm not sure if we can have a back and forth or whether that's
Yes, I
possible.
can.
Okay.
Yes, I can.
So, and the reluctance to sleep in his own room. So is your son disrespectful? Does he call you names and so forth?
He has.
Okay.
He does.
Does he curse at you?
No, cursing is one thing that children do.
Oh,
Luckily.
good. I'm glad to hear that. Now, maybe that's coming down the road. I don't know, but good that he doesn't do that right now. And this ties nicely, Prentice, in what I was saying about a specific example and
Yeah, it's
providing the
perfect,
listeners with
perfect
something
setup.
concrete. So, let me do it for you, and I'll try to get through it as quickly as I can. And this is just an overview. I cannot go into every detail about this, but here's a basic idea. First of all, I'm sure you've already told your son many, many times he can't yell at you and it's not okay to call you names and so on and so forth. So what you're doing there is you're establishing an expectation. In our family, we do not yell and scream when we don't get our way or when we're frustrated. And it's certainly not okay to call your parents or anybody else those kinds of terrible names. So I bet you've tried setting that limit. The problem is the setting of the limit alone has done nothing to change his behavior. And that's true with a lot of difficult kids. You can tell them what you want them to do, but certainly that in no way means they're going to do it, which then leads you to the second part of behavior change, which is enforcing a limit. So if the rule in your family, I think as it should be, which is there's no name calling and there's no yelling, then you have to come up with a way to back up that expectation. And I believe you said your son was 13. Am I getting that right?
Yes, you are.
Fantastic. So probably he has a cell phone. Almost certainly he has some kind of access to electronic devices, and that would be a tablet or a gaming system. I'm guessing he has all of those things?
Yes, he does.
Fantastic. So step one is we don't talk to people in our house this way. Step two would be saying to him, you know, I think I'm going to handle it differently from now on when you do. So if you call me a name or you yell and carry on and do all these things, then from now on, the only way you can access all of your privileges, get on your phone, have your phone in your possession for that matter, get on your gaming system, really anything that requires a screen, the only day that you'll be able to do that is on a day where you're not yelling or calling names and doing all of these things. So, you know, on a generally positive day, the world is yours. You can do all the fun privileges that you have available to you. But on any day where you do these things, then that's not going to be a day that you can access your screens. And by the way, if you end up not being able to access your screens because you've engaged in that behavior, I'm going to return those things to you only when you've earned them. So there's no timeline associated with this. It's not like you've lost your phone for the day or something like that. It's you've lost your phone until I think you've earned it back. How do you earn it back? Is by having great days. That would include no name calling, no losing your temper, no doing these things. If you can behave that way for me for some reasonable amount of time, then I would be happy to return your cell phone to you. But I will not return your cell phone to you until you've given me that behavior. You can get started on that right now by accepting this consequence, or you can be mad about the consequence, maybe even be mad for several days. That's fine with me. And be mad for a few days and then start earning your stuff back. It is completely up to you. So you only get the good things. The kid only gets the good things when they're behaving in the way that you want. If they're not behaving in some of those big ways, then they don't access those privileges on the day. And you don't return the privileges until you've gotten the positive behavior for a reasonable amount of time, which for most kids, you know, this restriction doesn't have to be very long. It could be for the remainder of the day. It could be for a couple of days. I generally don't recommend long consequences because they don't work any better. Sometimes they're worse. And it's only, the privileges are only given back once your son behaves in the way that you would want him to. So that's called pause, earn, and return reinforcement. The privilege is paused because he was misbehaving. He has to earn it back based on positive behavior, and then it's returned to him. For the psychologist types listening, that's called negative reinforcement. But negative reinforcement is a terrible name that nobody understands.
Right.
Pause, earn, and return is super easy for parents to remember. Does that make sense?
One really quick.
Bianca?
Yes, it absolutely does. Do you recommend having a conversation to establish this kind of new thing we're going to do if it happens, or do I wait until we have a conflict and then talk about it?
Great question.
Do it well in advance. Right. Don't wait for the next problem, because if you wait to have the conversation when there's a problem, he's not listening to you. He's probably just being disrespectful and mad. You're never going to get anything to penetrate that fog when it's happening. But what I would do is you catch the kid in a decent mood. Right. You've got his attention. Maybe you're driving in a car someplace. I like talking to kids in cars because they're kind of a captive audience. There's nowhere for them to go. And I would say, hey, I want to have a conversation with you. I was thinking back to the day before yesterday, and I kind of remember you got super mad about something. You lost your temper and you called me a name, I think. And I think you know that that's not okay. So I think I'm going to handle that differently from now on. So from now on, if something like that were to happen, here's what I'm going to do. And you just explain it to him the way I just explained it to you. I would recommend making that conversation brief, under about 2 or 3 minutes tops. Because he's going to argue with you. He's going to tell you that's unfair, that you don't know what you're talking about, on and on and on. So you just deliver the package as quickly as you possibly can, and now you're done. And in my mind, you've just given your son fair warning. He may not have listened to what you just said. He probably doesn't believe that you're actually going to do that. But now you've told him what you're going to do, and the next time you do it. And be prepared. If he's accustomed to getting his screens just kind of whenever, now he's going to have to earn them. He will not like that idea one bit, and he will do his very best to talk you out of it, but you have to just stand firm. Look, these are the new rules, and I explained them to you. I'm not going to bend. If you talk to me that way, you without your screens, you have to earn them back.
Thank you very much. This is wonderful.
You're very welcome. Oh, thank you so much. I'm glad you liked it.
And Bianca, I think you also pointed to something that's really important. There's a whole chapter in Paul's book about setting expectations and not getting sucked into the back and forth and the power struggles. So can you talk briefly about the importance of setting expectations for your kids?
Well, I think parents are pretty good about the setting expectations. That usually sounds like, hey, you have to do chores around the house because you live here, or I expect you to make sure that all of your homework is done on time. Parents are usually pretty good with that part. But when I talk about expectations in addition to that is expectations around how you treat others, right? My expectations for my own daughters were that I expected them to be kind, and I expected them to treat others in a way that they would want to be treated. I expected that when I asked them to do something, they would do it without a huge amount of pushback. I expected them to do their best in school. I expected them to help out around the house. It's just a million different things. So you have to have high expectations of kids. Sometimes when kids have all kinds of mental health issues, parents will lower their expectations.
Right.
Well, they're depressed and they're anxious. You know, I'm going to talk to their school about maybe they don't have to have as much homework as other kids. I do not recommend that at all. I think if you lower your bar of expectations with kids, they will meet that low bar and go no further. You know, I'm not going to give you much beyond that. But keep your expectations as high. Assume that your kids are capable. Assume that they can do hard things. Communicate that to them. Look, I know it's hard for you to go to school because it makes you nervous a lot of the time, but I have confidence in your ability to do it. What I also know is the more you go, the less nervous you're going to be. So it's not okay with me that you stay home because you have an upset stomach or you're just not feeling it on a Monday morning. You still need to go. And then you have to be able to enforce them going. You have to incentivize them in such a way that it makes sense for them to go. Like, might be, again, no screens. If you're going to stay home from school, I expect you to be in your bedroom. There's no TV, there's no phone, there's no nothing. But I would be happy to return your screens to you, not at the end of the day, but after you've gone to school tomorrow. So either go or don't go, it's completely up to you.
Yeah, and the importance of your delivery. And I love that chapter on on disengaging and taking yourself out of those power struggles. Unfortunately, that's going to be a conversation, hopefully for another time. I'd love to have you back on and explore this more. There's a lot more information here that I think would be great for kids. We got about a minute left, so I'd like for you to just briefly give us some takeaway points or thoughts about challenging kids and what parents should do if they want to get some help.
You bet. So I think all kids are a joy. And I like what you said, Prentice, earlier about challenging kids. They're amazing. Now, they drive you crazy. And obviously, they drive parents crazy, too. I'm not in any way saying that's not true. But they're just them. And I like strong-willed kids. First of all, I see them as a challenge. But secondly, if you can take that nature, that aspect of them, and if that kid, with their parents' guidance, can then go off into the world and use that in some kind of productive way. You know, there are lots of occupations where being strong-willed will carry them very, very far. Yep. Parents often joke, my kid would make a great attorney. All right, let's capitalize on that.
Thank you. I gotta wrap up here, but thank you so much for being here. Paul, I appreciate the conversation. Thanks to everyone for listening. I'm Prentice Pemberton. Have a great day.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.